beginning of chapter number 1:24. Remember that Paul is in. Can you hear me? Paul is in front of King Agrippa, and he is also with Festus and some commanders and officers with that. And he's given his defense. His defense this time is a little bit different from the two before him. That he is, actually, he's more or less preaching a sermon to them. And he had just told, well, he had told them about how he was when the Christianity began, how that he was opposed to it, and he was persecutors of Christians, and he was even so that agreement to the death of them, and saying, and then he was even going to foreign cities or country to see about it, and he was on his way to Damascus. And that's when he had the appearance of Jesus in front of him. And he told about that, what had happened. And then he says in verse 19, he says, "Therefore, King Agrippa, I was not disobedient to the heavenly vision." He had a choice. He could have said, "No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to continue like I'm going to." Or he said, like he says, "I'm going to be obedient to the heavenly vision because Jesus told me that you are persecuting me." And he says, "I have a mission for you, and you are to go to preach the gospel, the good news, and also you're going to be a witness to things that you have seen and things that will be revealed to you." So Paul is telling him that, telling King Agrippa and the group here, that he was obedient, and that's the reason you see a change in him. Whereas he was persecuting and agreeing to killing Christians, he is a Christian now, and he's out preaching it. And he declared, he's telling him, he says now in verse 20, "And declare first to those in Damascus and in Jerusalem and throughout all the region of Judea." He went to the Jews first, and then he says, "And then to the Gentiles, that they should repent, turn away from the to God, and do works befitting repentance." And he says, "For these reasons, the Jews seized me in the temple and tried to kill me. Therefore, having obtained help from God," he's giving credit to God for all the things that has helped him during this period of time that he was arrested. God has been with him. It doesn't. People say, "Well, he's been beaten, all this thing like that." Yeah, but Paul had a mission. God told him, "says you will be preaching in Rome," and so he saved him from that. And there's a number of other things he's done too, and he's given credit to God. He said, "And to this day, I stand witnessing both to great and small, saying no other thing than those which the prophets and Moses said would come." That's what he's talking about. He's been talking about Moses and the prophets and how they've been talking about the prophecy of the Messiah. And he said in verse 23 that the Christ would suffer, that he would be the first to rise from the dead, and would proclaim light to the Jewish people and to the Gentiles. He said, Christ is the one that is going to bring light into this world, this dark world, with it. And he's going to bring the light in. And so he says, this is what the Moses and the prophet had talked about. Well, Jesus Christ is the one who fulfilled these things. And that's why that's where we left off. Anybody have any comments or questions upon that before we begin? All right. And 24 now. Now, he is speaking it now in verse 24. "Now, as he," Paul, "thus made his defense, Festus said with a loud voice, 'Paul, you are beside yourself. Much learning is driving you mad.' But he said, 'I am not mad, most noble Festus, but speak the words of truth and reason. For the king, talking about King Agrippa, before whom I also speak freely, know these things. For I am convinced that none of these things escapes his attention, since this thing was done, was not done in a corner. Then he says, verse 27, King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? I know that you do believe. Now, Paul had begun to talk about a defense and everything, and Festus comes up and says, with a loud voice, for everybody to hear this, it says, Paul, are you beside yourself? Much learning is driving you mad. Well, in Festus' opinion, Paul's enthusiasm has overcome his better judgment. This is what Festus is thinking here. Your many writings are turning you to madness. Festus thinks that Paul has spent so much time poring over these ancient writings that he has made him insane. And what he said, talking about much learning, learning here is actually talking about ancient manuscripts or writings. And so this is what he's talking about, that you have turned mad. You've been reading the scriptures so much and with them, all these ancient writings, that you have actually become insane. And this is what Festus said. Remember now, King Agrippa is a Jew. Festus is not a Jew. He's a Roman. And so, in his interpretation, listen to Paul, what he's been talking about. He says, you're insane. You're just crazy. You're mad. Now, you think about that. What do you think the world now thinks about Christianity? Do they think you're really sane people? You mean you believe in God, a creator of this world? What are you talking about? You mean there's going to be a resurrection? There's going to be a judgment at the end? Don't you know that this is all we got? This is it. Where are you coming from all this? What? This is what Festus is talking about, and that's what you're going to find out in the world today if you have some conversations with people. And you start talking to them about God, they're going to look at you and say, you're funny. There's something strange about you. And Paul says, I am not mad. Paul calmly rejects the collusion to which Festus has come. In accordance with the prediction of Moses and the prophets, and the facts which have occurred in the death and resurrection of Jesus, Paul could say words of truth and reason. Believing there is a creator is much more reasonable than believing what these people are talking about in the evolutionary thing. And this Big Bang Theory. I mean, you really have to go out there. You can't do anything. But you know that there is a creator. You just look around you. This world just does not happen just by itself. We don't have our laws of Mother Nature in this order by happenstance. There's a divine plan behind it. And Paul was telling him of it, I am not mad. I am speaking the truth. Where is truth? From God. The scriptures. They tell you what this world is. Who is a creator and what he has done. And remember what God, what Paul had said, that God's, you know, he's the one that has delivered me. He's giving the credit to God for what, how far I'm him right now. Who has been saving me? God. And Paul's telling him here, if you want to know about truth and reason, then you want to look to God. He talks about more. Says the fulfillment of the prophecies in Jesus was not some obscure little affair that nobody knew about. Everybody knew about it. King Agrippa knew about it. It's 20 or 30 years ago that Christ died. But it's not obscure. Everybody knows about it. Nor was it something that it had originated in Paul's mind. And King Agrippa himself would have been well aware of what had happened. Him being a Jew, he knows what's going on, especially with his line of family. He knows what's happening. He's familiar with Jesus. He's familiar with what the teachings are with it. And Paul said, look. And then he comes along and says, now, King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? And Paul says, I know that you do believe. If Agrippa confesses his faith in this prophetic testimony, then the next question is surely going to be, then what will you do about Jesus Christ? Because Paul puts them together, that Moses and the prophets were prophesied about the Messiah. Now, if you misunderstood about the Messiah, it's not the scripture's fault, it's your fault. It's your reasoning, it's your thinking. But he's telling them here, he says, Moses and the prophets told you what was going to happen, that Christ would suffer, the Messiah would suffer. And if you look at it, Jesus of Nazareth fulfilled the prophecies. He is the Christ, he is the Messiah. And that's the reason why I changed. I believed it. I believe with all my heart, and I'm going to obey it. He gave me a commandment, a mission to do, and that's what I'm here to do. And that's the reason I'm in front of you right now. And why am I telling you all this? Well, you are sinners. You haven't obeyed. And I am going to teach you and preach to you and tell you about Jesus Christ, the Messiah. If you're looking for hope and redemption, salvation is through Him. And that's what I'm here for. Then, verse 28. Then Agrippa said to Paul, you almost persuaded me to become a Christian. And Paul said, I would to God that not only you, but also all who hear me today might become both almost and altogether such as I am, except for these chains. When he had said these things, the king, Festus, stood up, as well as the governor and Bernice and those who sat with them. And when they had gone aside, they talked among themselves, saying, this man, talking about Paul, is doing nothing deserving of death or chains. Then Agrippa said to Festus, this man might have been set free if he had not appealed to Caesar. Now, in verse 28, I'll use the New King James Version in all my slides and in my studies thing. But this is not the best translation in my opinion. The literal translation is, in a little, you are persuading me to make a Christian. In little, you are persuading me to make a Christian. That's what it literally translates what to be. The Revised Standard Version, this is it, in a short time, you think to make me a Christian. And the American Standard Version is, with but a little persuasion, you would make me a Christian. Now, there's a lot of different opinions, how this is with the translations, what is. I don't know what's in King Agrippa's heart. There's no way to. God does, but I don't know. But if I was looking at the literal translation, in a little, you are persuading me to make a Christian. And in words, basically, you know, this in this period of time, or short period of time, or you're presenting the lesson, you're presenting a sermon, and you're trying to reason with me in this period of time that you're in front of me, that you're trying to persuade me to be a Christian. I think this is what King Agrippa was talking about. He is evading the question, though. What about Jesus? He knew it was going. That was coming. When Paul said, you know, you're about to believe about the prophets, well, you know he's going to say, yes, I believe the prophets. Then what are you going to do about Jesus? He didn't really come out and tell you what he would believe. But he just telling you, he said, Paul, I can see what you're trying to do. You're trying to tell me, and in this period of time you're in here with me, that you're persuading me now to change over to become a Christian, like you had testified and you used in your defense that how you were, how you fought against Christianity, and you were probably one of the best ones in persecuting. You had a reputation for that, but look at how you have changed. And he tells them the reason why he changed. Because I had this vision. Jesus appeared to me. And I says, you know, I obeyed it. And that's what I'm doing now. He gave me a commission tell me to go ahead and preach the gospel. And he wants me to be a witness. That's what I'm trying to do to you now, is be a witness to you about Jesus Christ and tell you what I all know about him. And what I can tell you about him, he's the Messiah. He is the Christ. And I think this is what basically he's talking about here in verse 28. Does anybody else have any other thing you want to say about it? All right. And Paul says, you know, I would to God that not only you, all right. So what is he doing? Paul confesses boldly and most earnestly that persuading this group to become Christian was his intention, I believe. One inclusion, except for these chains, he would not wish imprisonment on them. My bondage, my period of time, I've been in prison, in confinement here, and I got chained. Now, we've talked about before is that the Romans would use two guards, one on each side of the man, and would be chained to both guards, one on each side, left and right. Now, while he's in front of him, there's a possibility that with all the group here, he maybe only have one guard. But the Roman thing is, most time they would have him two. And he was telling them, now, you see these chains in front of you. I don't wish that for you. That's not what I'm wishing for you. But I am wishing for you to be a Christian. And if you would just listen to my reason, the truth and the reasoning, I'm swaying to you that you will become that, except for these chains. I don't want you to be chained up. I do want you to be in prison. And then King Festus just, you know, all right, verse 30, when he had said these things, the king stood up and said, this is it. And we're over with. The king's action led the others to follow his example. The rest of them then got up too. And they went outside the hall of fame, and he says, with them, he says, one thing has become clear to this group, that Paul was completely innocent in the eyes of Roman law. It says, this man is doing nothing deserving of death or change. In other words, those chains, he shouldn't, for what I'm listening to, what I've heard today, he doesn't need to be in chains. And certainly, if he's not to be in chains, he certainly would not be one to be put to death. Then King Agrippa says to Festus at the very end, this man might have been set free if he had not appealed to Caesar. Now, what has gone on before, that's not a true statement. He would have been let set free a year ago. Felix would have set him free. And Festus would have, after listening to him one time about that, would say, wait a minute, this is it. He wouldn't have to go check with his counselor and say, when he says, this is what it's going to be, then I'm going to appeal to Caesar then. If you're not going to let me go, if you're going to have to discuss about it and think about it, I've got another option. I'm going to appeal to Caesar. I have a right to. I am a Roman citizen. But it seemed like, no, I don't think he would have been set free. But he may have been. I don't know. King Agrippa states, he says, Paul should be set free if he had not appealed to Caesar. And that's why I think King Agrippa says, I probably would recommend to you, Festus, set this man free. But we've already seen how Festus is wanting to please the Jews, and him being the governor here for a consul here, that, you know, he's going to listen to the Jews. And he has been listened to. That's what Felix did, listen to the Jews. And so I just really have the doubts, but, you know. But you got to remember, though, this is God's plan. God is in control. God is in charge. And this is the way it's going to be. Any other thoughts or comments upon the 26th chapter? Freddie?
You know, another thing about Agrippa, he wanted a bunch of y'all to get back. You know, if he said, I freed Paul and it turned bad, it's on me. Mm. He wanted, you know, get a bunch of y'all to get back.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's sidestepped a question about Jesus, and he's using this right now and said, now look, if it wasn't for that appeal to Caesar, you know, we would let him go. Do you not think it, here Paul says, I appealed to Caesar, but if you just let me go anyway, I'll take that appeal away or what? I don't know. But that's just another way of saying, look, I'm out of this. It's not my problem. That's what people say. Festus, this is your problem, not mine. But this is what I would say. Any other thing about it? All right, let's go to chapter 27. If I get it right.
You know, Dale, another thing. Go ahead. Looking at the scripture in regard to Paul over in Revelation chapter 3. Is neither being hot or cold. And Paul was hot for the cause of Christ, you know.
Maybe in a minute I'll have chapter 27 up. Let's see. No, it's not. All right, you just get that.
See, we got all these. Oh, I'm telling you, but we got all these presentations open here at the same time.
But
this is the one you want.
Yeah, but that's one.
There you go.
Okay. I thought I closed that, but maybe I didn't.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay. I knew you'd be coming handy, Doug.
Once in a while.
Uh-huh. Just not for your looks only, huh?
Maybe they're the same.
All right. Chapter 27. What's going to happen in chapter 27? Do what? Yeah. Now, you want to see God's providence, you're going to see it in chapter 27. As if it's telling you right now. The practical emphasis of this chapter falls on divine providence. The overruling hand of God that has been so evident in Luke's narrative from Paul's arrest on. This emphasis is even more evident in the midst of the circumstance of the shipwreck. Consider the amazing combination of factors overruled by the Lord to bring Paul to Rome. the plots against him, you know, the militations of the Jews, Claudius Lysias, and the Roman military, the corruption of Felix, the indecision of Festus, and Roma. All these play a part in that God used for Paul to go to Rome with it. Now, Paul has already said that, you know, by God's hand. Well, we're going to see it right now. All right, chapter 27, verses 1 through 5. And when it was decided that we should sail to Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to one named Julius, a centurion of the Augusta regiment. So entering a ship of there's a number of ways to pronounce this. This is one I chose. Adramyttum. It's the easiest one. We put to sea, meaning to sail along the coast of Asia. Okay? All right. Let me just interrupt and say this. We see the word we up here. So who else is there? Luke is there. When you see that we, Luke's being the writer now. So we see that Luke is in here. Okay? And Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, was with us. We saw Aristarchus in, I think, the 19th chapter. And the next day, we landed in Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him liberty to go to his friends and receive care. When we had put to sea from there, we sailed under the shelter of Cyprus because the winds were contrary. And when we had sailed over the sea, which is off of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. All right. Paul and other prisoners were delivered to Roman centurion Julius. Now, I don't know if these other prisoners' reason of going to Rome, if they had appealed to Caesar, it doesn't say anything about it. But Paul is not the only prisoner. You have other prisoners that are going on in this ship. And, of course, we'll find out later there's 276 people are on this ship. So there are other prisoners besides Paul on this. But this Julius is the one that is responsible. He's the one accounted for to take them. He's a centurion, okay? Now, centurion is a rule of 100 soldiers or men. Now, where he has 100 here, I don't know. It doesn't say. But he's the one that's in charge of taking these prisoners to Rome. Well, the ship had put to sea, and after a stop at Sidon, where Paul is kindly permitted by the centurion to visit his friends. Now, doesn't say why he was friendly towards him. It just says that Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him liberty to go to his friends and receive care. Well, Paul apparently would be able to leave the ship. It says he'd go to his friends, so that would probably lead that he could go into the city and receive care, whatever care that is, whether it's food or rationings or any supplies that he can take with him. That's like I said, but he has liberty to go ahead and do these things. Doesn't say anything about the other prisoner. It just says talk about Paul. I'm assuming that maybe Luke and Aristarchus, couldn't mind, went blank, probably could go with him. I don't know. And some of the commentary says, too, when prisoners are taken to Rome or transferred this way, they are allowed to take some people with them especially if they have servants or slaves, they can take them with it. And the reason they would want to take them with that, of course, they can help take care of them, but it puts the prisoner in a higher plateau or plane than other prisoners if you've got slaves and servants with you. And he may be called, thinking Luke and Aristarchus are his slaves or servants with Paul. I don't know. But that was just some reading I read that they were allowed to do certain things, certain people they could take with them on a trip. Now, the ship was put under the shelter of Cyprus. Here's a map here. Here it goes. We're right here. There's a port here, a harbor here, at Caesarea. And the first place they're going to go is to Sidon here, or Sidon, whichever, which is a short distance. Normally, why do you think they're going in all this back ways like this at this time right now? Wouldn't it have been a lot simpler, you think, to go from here to go up this way? Why don't they? What?
Avoiding the open water.
Oh, avoiding what?
The open water.
Uh-huh. What's wrong with the open water? All right. It's the time of the year. They appear from November, using our calendar now, the period from November to March is, if you go, that's your problem. It's a rough time to go. This is either probably September or October. This is in what you call a hit and miss area time frame. From November to March, it's danger. So what they're trying to do is probably get there beforehand for the danger come through with it. So what they would do now, like Andy's talking about, if you go wrong one. If you were to go, like we talked about, from straight out here, you have, in this time of year, your chances of making very slim. But if you go up around the coast, the winds are a lot less, and plus, you're talking about here in this first one, you got Cyprus here. If you go around this way, the wind comes up this way, that's going to block it out, and you stay close to the coast. And so that's the reason why that they're going, if you can, as much as possible to the close. But from when they get up here, instead of going what they were thinking about, we'll read about that. You know, you think you could go this way here. No way. It's because they're in a danger part this time when they get up there, as you will find out anyway. But as you see, we see Sidon here, and you got Pamphylia, Lycia here. This is Asia. This is Asia Minor, like there. And the winds they talked about here in the southwest or northwest or northeast are very, very dangerous at this particular time. So that's the reason why you see a lot of these things are going to happen. What they do when they're traveling here. Now. I want to say here, this verse. The centurion found a Alexandrian ship sailing to Italy, and he put us on board. All right. Alexandria is right down here. That's Egypt. Rome gets most of its wheat and barley and grains and stuff like that from Egypt. Now, why Alexandria ship is up here is probably it's making the delivery and is trying to get back down. But they're trying here now, and if they say no, he's going to Italy. That's where they're going to go. It's just that the period of time that these people should know this, and why would he be up there at this particular time? I have no idea. Another thing, this Myra right here is about actually 2 miles off from the harbor. It's a beautiful city. They excavated it. They got a big amphitheater that faces out to the water thing. And what they excavated, they have these statues and buildings. Thing. They said it was quite a beautiful scenery that way in this area here, which I never knew anything about until I just read about it. Anything else? We're out of time. Anything else, anybody? Well, start about with verse 6 next time. Appreciate it.